when disaster strikes. Will you be ready?
Good evening, and we begin tonight with the monster hurricane and its deadly impact already.
When all hope is gone, will the government be there for you? If you're looking for ways to take your prepping to the next level, then you've come to the right place. Broadcasting from a secure and well-prepared location, it's time for Prepping 2.0. And now, please welcome authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Hello, everyone. This is Shelby Gallagher. Welcome to the Prepping 2.0 radio show / podcast / wherever we can find airwaves. And I would like to say hello to my co-host, Glenn Tate.
Hello, co-host and wife and awesome prepping buddy. How are you, my dear?
I'm just peachy keen. We are broadcasting just like we did last week from the cabin.
The real live cabin, the one in the 299 Days book series. We'll cut this part of it a little short because our guest, Steve Oxtokolnis, has amazing, cool information for us on terrorism. We're at the cabin. Patreon supporters have the ability to rent the cabin. We send you the Airbnb link, and that's a pretty cool thing if you're a big fan of my books. And, of course, the cabin is a scene in book three of Shelby's books. Shelby, when might book three be coming out? Any breaking news on that?
Breaking news. It is out, except I will say this. It is out on paperback form. It is out in Kindle form. Stay tuned. It'll be out in Audible as soon as we can get it recorded and produced. So, yeah, you can go to my website, agreatstate.com, and click on the links so that you can purchase it, which is great. And we're going to talk pretty heavily and reference it because the topic we have today, I draw out quite a bit in book three, and it's not a politically correct topic, and I got quite a bit of pushback on it, and I don't care. I think it's a topic that is not talked about because we're so afraid of offending somebody. So, but we have a few more things to talk about. Go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah, I'll just cut this part short, too. All the information, the patiently awaiting the collapse stickers, the T-shirts, the I Miss America AR mags, all the stations to find us on, all the stuff you need to know about the show, prepping2-0.com, prepping2-0.com. It's all there. And Shelby, we have a feature we do every show, which is there's a list primarily derived from Bosnian survivors of the top 100 things that go the quickest in a collapse. So that would be the top 100 things to either stock up on or have a plan for stocking up on. What is item number 30?
Item number 30 is important even in pristine times, toilet paper.
Oh, yeah. And you probably, everybody saw the stuff. I know you brought this article to my attention, Shelby. It was about a couple months ago. Venezuela, as it continues to fall apart in a socialist dictatorship. Huh. Funny how those things always seem to be related. But the Venezuelan army / thug force was being paid in what?
Toilet paper. Not in food, not in money, not in, but Maduro was paying his faithful, forced to be faithful army in rolls of toilet paper. And I guarantee it, they were thankful because when you don't have toilet paper, it's ugly.
Exactly. And this is one of these things where, you know, Americans are used to having toilet paper. I certainly am. Last time I had to go do my business in the woods, was a couple years ago, and it was not pleasant. So toilet paper is a big deal. Shelby, we're always telling people about prepping 2.0 and how this is the next level of prepping and how one of the reasons 2.0 exists is that in the intervening years since a lot of us started prepping, and a lot of us started prepping about 2009 when Obama got elected and there was a, quote, recession that was actually a depression. We won't get into that detail. There weren't as many products out. And some of the things that were available had higher prices. Now prices have come down. What a superb example of prepping 2.0 toilet paper. You're saying, Glenn, you're telling me that in the last 10 years, toilet paper has been reinvented? Yeah, actually I am. Pause for dramatic effect. Yeah, I actually am. Here's the thing. Go on Amazon, look these up. There are a bunch of varieties of them. They go by various names. Now you can get little teeny kind of like tablets or capsules of toilet paper that you add a few drops of water to, and it becomes
a full roll of toilet paper.
Well, yeah, a sheet, you know, like a sheet of toilet paper. And so they're great for backpackers. Just go in and look for, like, add water, toilet paper. And you can get this box. I'm motioning with my hands, which is very uninformative to our radio
and podcast.
It makes
for great radio, yes.
Hand gestures, always a good time. And but a box, I don't know, a loaf of bread, maybe half a loaf of bread, has 500 sheets of toilet paper. And the reason that's cool is, you know, rolls and rolls of toilet paper take up a tremendous of traditional toilet paper. Hydrated toilet paper, right? Take up a tremendous amount of space that could be used for other stuff. So take advantage of the new technology. It's not really technology, it's a new product. And get yourself Just Add Water toilet paper, because boy, are you going to need it, and hugely barterable. Hugely yes. Barterable. Get more than you can possibly use. Because as you can imagine, in the collapse and the restoration, one of the last things the authorities are going to turn their attention to is making sure those factories are making toilet paper. So there we have it. Shelby, tell us about book three.
So book three of my series, A Great State, The Rescue, hits a lot on our porous borders, sanctuary cities being a magnet for people who are in this country illegally and criminally, and enacting chaos. I'm going to say that. I'm trying not to give spoilers out. So that's why I'm being very careful in what I say, because I want people to enjoy the story. But when I wrote this, from the point of view as I was watching news headlines, watching how sanctuary cities, like I just said, are a magnet for those folks who are here illegally, and they know they are. They're going to sanctuary cities because they know they will be protected. And also, we know that terrorists specifically who are taking advantage of our porous borders. I'm not saying everyone who crosses the border is a terrorist, but there are definitely some ass people in Eastern Europe right now who had their caravans come through a couple of years ago and now have violent crime in the streets. Terrorists make it in. And so they're here now, they're in sanctuary cities. And when they're in sanctuary cities, they start enacting their ideology. And their ideology, we know, is Sharia-based law. It's anti-women, it's anti-LGBTQ, it's not American, it's not freedom, and it's lawless, it's murderous, and it's terrifying. So that's book three. And I wrote this and then put it out. And then we just so happen to have one of the best experts on this very thing with us is Steve Oxtakolnis. I said it right. I'm so glad.
Yay.
So I'm so excited. So, but we want Steve, why tell us about yourself. Tell us about your background and how you come to be who you are.
For the past 18 years, I've served as president of Alert USA. This is one of the more widely used homeland security threat and incident notification services for mobile devices. So we work very closely with the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Justice, the FBI, where we are provided information about threats to the national security of the country. We in turn send that information out to the mobile devices of counterterrorism professionals in the field, each of the branches of the armed services, federal, state, county, municipal law enforcement agencies across the country, as well as just average citizens who want to know what's going on subjects that are just absolutely never covered in the mainstream media until something bad happens. And so this is the baseline focus of the service, is that in addition to the partnerships that we have with the different federal and state agencies, as well as international partners, we also monitor each of the social media platforms in 7 different languages. Primarily, we go up and then other areas up to 15 different languages, watching for specific keywords like anything that would allude to, for instance, a vehicle ramming attack or a bomb blast, active shooter incidents, and so on, so that in that I'm more likely to find out about something like this happening from somebody pulling out their phone and sending a tweet to their friends than I am any other human source or any agency source, in that it cuts down dramatically the amount of time that from an incident happening to when we find out, and then we in turn can validate that an incident has at least taken place. We might not get the details, but we can get an alert out to our subscribers that, hey, something just went down near the U.S. Embassy in Paris, or somebody just drove a heavy lorry down the promenade in Nice, France, and there's a lot of people lying on the ground, you know, this type of thing, so that with a few flicks of a keyboard, we can instantly increase the situational awareness of innumerable people that are on the service, so that people are looking out, making sure that there's for instance, coordinated attacks taking place in other areas and all that. So this is the general gist of the Alerts USA service.
Exactly, Steve. And I have to tell you, I'm an Alerts USA subscriber. I have been for years and years. I've paid for the service. It's very reasonably priced. And then I got you on the show and we got to know each other through mutual friends and all of that other stuff. Cannot recommend it highly enough, especially let's say you have a prepping team like I do, and you have designated guys doing different stuff, comms, whatever it might be, medical. I'm the intel guy, and we have one subscription, which is me, to Alerts USA. I'm the intel guy, and I don't pass on to my guys that there's been a shooting in Paris, because that's kind of headline news stuff, and they don't need to know it. But when I see there's one in Paris, and 13 minutes later, one in New York, and 4 minutes later, you know, one in Seattle, that's when I say, okay, boys, time to, you know, get ready. And so it's invaluable for preppers in general, but it's particularly invaluable for at least one of your team members to be getting Alerts USA text, because sometimes it's 5 minutes before it's on the news, sometimes it's 20, sometimes it's an hour. And when it comes to some of the stuff we're going to talk about here in the rest of the show, a few minutes of warning means you're on the highway before all the goofballs figure out what's going on. And so I want to really put an exclamation point on the fact that this is valuable for preppers. Shelby, you had a thing to say.
I was just going to say the same thing. This is the difference. I mean, there was something that because you and I both get Alerts USA, there was something that happened recently. It was like literally we got it 10 minutes before on our phone. It started making suddenly it's making the headlines. Suddenly there's breaking news or whatever. It's like that's 10 minutes that you and I can be down the if we needed to, down the freeway, down the highway, and beat, if it were truly, truly a major incident, we can beat the rush kind of thing. So this is a huge service. And it is, and just like you just said, Steve, it increases your situational awareness. It makes it so that you know what's going on before generally others do. And it's awesome. And it's an amazing service. So,
you know, let me give you two rather dramatic examples to highlight what we're talking about. The most recent would be the shooting incident at Mandalay Bay, where the guy was up inside of the suite of the hotel firing down onto the country music concert down below and across the street. Our subscribers found out that incident was unfolding while gunfire was still being heard. And it was 45 minutes before the mainstream media started to report on it. Another one goes back a few years, was the incident at Fukushima. Our subscribers knew more than a day before the meltdown started happening that was in the offing. And we found out through a contact at the State Department who let us know that the Japanese government had contacted the U.S. Embassy, which in turn contacted the State Department, and he got the NRC and the Department of Energy involved, and they were already starting to deploy resources over there. And so our subscribers were able to find out a day before things really started to go bad that was going to happen, because they couldn't get power to the site to properly cool the facilities. Mm. And so this just highlights, you know, while it might 5 minutes might be, you know, a very narrow window in some instances. We frequently scoop the crap out of the media big time. And
you can see patterns. And that's a point I was making about the spread of these things, because these incidents in and of themselves aren't always something to go head to the hills for.
Absolutely.
But especially when it comes to terrorism that we're going to be talking about for the next long period here, when you see patterns and you see a connection and you see this unfolding nationwide, that's when you need to be able to hit the road.
Very cool. So what I want to ask you about, Steve, and again, I look at this because I'm just fresh off of writing this book, terrorism in this country, how it's very different than it was 10 or even 15 years ago, or even when 9/11 happened. What does terrorism in this country look like today, currently, do you think?
Okay, so let me approach this from a broader view, and then we'll start to narrow down into the U.S. So the over the approximately the past 10 years, through multiple administrations and a tremendous amount of work on the part of the U.S. Armed Forces and law enforcement, they have pretty much decimated the ability for command and control of complex foreign attacks in the U.S. All of this has been greatly diminished. On the other side, you can look at it as though, as if you took a an aging tomato, put it on the counter, and slammed your hand down on it. The pieces go everywhere. And this is precisely what has happened with both the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda, that the pieces have scattered far more broadly than everybody's staying concentrated in, for instance, Afghanistan or in Syria and Iraq. And so, for instance, and we put this inside of the issue of Threat Journal newsletter that just went out this afternoon, that Al-Qaeda is far larger now, although decentralized, than at any point in time in their history. It's estimated they have at least 40,000 armed men spread across let's see, the Middle East, North and Central Africa, Indonesia, and South Asia. In the last few weeks, Ayman al-Zawahiri, the head of al-Qaeda, has made an announcement that they're spreading now into the Indian subcontinent. And so it's no longer just a group that's clustered in Afghanistan with some disparate parts around and so on. There's established groups in all of these different regions now. And so the like the Islamic State, things they've become less there's less central control for all of this, and these groups are operating independently, although they are all part of a larger group. And so while we have greatly diminish the ability for people to sit in a cave or a flat in Germany somewhere and put together large complex operations that can be conducted here in the U.S., the problem has grown significantly. On a weekly basis, if somebody would to just follow the news feed for the Department of Justice, every week there's people that are being either arrested, tried, convicted of trying to aid a foreign terrorist organization in some manner. And through all of these different efforts through local, state, and federal law enforcement, people are being picked up on and marshaled through the legal system. And so now, brewing back or narrowing the focus more towards the U.S., we touched on it a little bit during the conversation prior to the show, and that is the big vulnerability right now is the southern border. The mainstream media goes to incredible lengths to discredit any claim that jihadists or anyone else that falls into that same mindset that would come halfway around the world in order to carry out some type of an attack in the United States. They say, oh, well, that's, you know, this is nothing, you know, it can't be that many people and so on. It's a very dangerous situation right now in that if we are having so many people that are coming across the border, these people are known to be in the mix, prior to the last Congress leaving and the Democrats taking control of the House, the House Homeland Security Committee published a report on this very topic in January of this year that people can go to the House Homeland Committee website and be able to download. And it gives very detailed examples that this is in fact happening. The Customs and Border Protection and the Border Patrol, they have... They classify the people that they catch coming across the border. And there's a classification that they call special interest aliens other than Mexican, or SIAOTMs. And you'd be amazed at how many people that they catch that are coming from the Middle East and North African countries. Then there's a concern that because the Islamic State was essentially pushed out of Syria and Iraq, they are establishing themselves in a bunch of Central African countries and West African countries as well. And lo and behold, we're getting all kinds of people from Central and West Africa that are showing up in groups numbering as large as 1,000 on the southern border. And they're not trying to sneak across. They're using the well-known trade routes and the smuggling routes, and they will walk right up to the Border Patrol officers because they know that as soon as they step foot in, they're going to be briefly interviewed and then given a court date and their walking papers, and they're gone into the interior. And so all of this together, it poses a very dangerous situation for the country.
And I can add to that, Steve, I have a Border Patrol friend, and he told me that, and I'm going to be vague about some stuff here, but that some encrypted drug cartel radio frequencies were hacked by them. They were able to decrypt them. And they listened for hours and hours every night, people speaking Arabic on the southern border. So if anybody needed a real-life example of what we're talking about, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about jihadists on our southern border. And who knows the numbers? And here's the thing, and we're probably going to talk about this a little bit more when we talk about lone wolf attacks, and we have a couple minutes before we go to our next segment. But in these lone wolf situations, it doesn't take many. And then when you've got a lot of them, as Steve's describing, the evidence clearly shows there's a lot of them, you have an enormous problem. And the reason you're on the show, Steve, is terrorism as a trigger of the collapse. And that's just a teasing of the topic that we'll talk about after the commercials. But, you know, we've got things like, you know, a hack of the power grid, a hack of the financial system, hack of the internet, nuclear, biological, chemical, including dirty bombs, which are low level, you know, medical waste that get in a bomb and radiate places. We've got lone wolves, and we've got infrastructure attacks on, you know, things like water systems, and probably a bunch more, Steve, that you know about. But I want to set the table for the next segment and say, here's the link, everybody. Who knows how many jihadists pouring through the southern border and sitting here in the United States as sleeper cells, and then doing things like lone wolf attacks, dirty bombs. What if in the span of an hour, there were 200 attacks like this all over the country? You know, what would that mean? So we're going to go into our next segment. And when we come back, we're going to link these two topics. And this is stuff you need to know, preppers. Stay tuned.
We'll be right back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate right after this. Do you need a custom Kydex holster or magazine holder? Glenn Tate's favorite custom holster and mag holder maker is Northwest Retention Systems. You can select your holster or mag holder color, including the I Miss America logo, and Northwest Retention Systems will custom make yours. While you're at it, look into the Scout Chest Rig Holster. Glenn loves his for vehicle operations and for fishing. Made by a young craftsman supporting a growing family of young patriots, Northwest Retention Systems products are 100% American-made with no foreign parts. Find out more online at northwestretentionsystems.com.
Hi, everyone. Glenn Tate here.
And Shelby Gallagher here. People always ask us whether a particular property would be good for prepping.
Well, luckily, there's someone who does this for a living, and that's Brian at Strategic Landscape Design. He's a bug-out location consultant for a new property or the one you already have.
Strategic Landscape Design shows you how to make your property productive for you now and when the collapse comes. Visit strategiclandscapedesign.com and see all the things Brian can do for you and your property. That's strategiclandscapedesign.com.
PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Looking to meet other like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own prepper group? Already have a group? Join PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet has gathered the biggest names in the industry to help unite preppers everywhere. Join John Jacob Schmidt, Scott Hunt, Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy, Glenn Tate, Shelby Gallagher, Charlie Hogwood, Samuel Culper, Survivor Jane, Rick Austin, Franklin Horton, Ryan Mitchell, and Brian Duff. Our team is united. Check us out at PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. PrepperNet.com.
And we're back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Shelby Gallagher with Prepping 2.0 with our guest, Steve Ostakolis. I'm not going to say it right. Anyway.
Ostakolis.
Thank you.
Good.
With Alerts USA. And Steve, tell us about kind of the history of Islam, because it's so important to this topic before we go any further.
Well, in terms of the history of what we define as terrorism, America's trouble with Islamic terrorism stretches back to just after the 13 colonies declared independence from Britain in 1776. At that time, Muslim pirates, which the history books call Barbary pirates, were seizing American merchant ships off the coast of Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia, and what is now known as Libya, plundering the cargo and enslaving the crews. These actions ultimately led to the First and Second Barbary Wars, which were fought between 1801 and 1805, and then 1815 and 1816. If you think about it, the very first foreign military conflict ever authorized by U.S. Congress, now this was not a formal declaration of war, they just authorized it, was against Muslim terrorists of that era. Hmm. Additionally, the first time that the American flag was ever raised in victory over a foreign battlefield was the Battle of Derna, which is a port city in what's now known as Libya.
And the Marine Corps hymn, of course, from the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli, and that's the 1805 reference to Libya. So it's been going on, yeah.
And very, very interesting, well prior to the start of the First Barbary War, Thomas Jefferson and John Adams met with the ambassador from the Tripolitan government while they were visiting London. And in that meeting, they asked the ambassador why they were so hostile to the new American Republic. And the guy, this is exactly what the guy said. It was founded on the laws of their prophet, and it was written in their Quran that all nations who do not have who do not acknowledge their authority were sinners, and it was their right and duty to make war upon them whenever they could be, wherever they could be found, and to make slaves of them and take prisoners, so that every Muslim who would be slain in battle was sure to go to paradise. This is the comment that was made more than 230 years ago. It's like you're reading out of a newspaper today.
Right.
It's the exact same basis for what's going on today. When you peel away all of the apologetics, the mainstream media narrative of this being a religion of peace and so on, it all comes back down to the dogma and the one of the central foundations of the Islamic faith, which is to spread the word, and you either convert, be killed, or you live under subjugation. And so, you know, how little things change. You know, this has been going on since 632, the year that Muhammad died, and actually prior to that. So.
Well, it goes back to biblical. I mean, we're not going to do. It goes back to. There's biblical references to this going way, way back. So we're not going to do that. But what were you going to say, Glenn?
Well, I was just going to say, Shelby. One of the reasons. So we're looking back at the early 1800s and now present day America. Shelby, you write about this a whole bunch in Book 3, A Great State: The Rescue, that's coming out. what are some of the stuff, some of the things you wrote about how Americans over tolerate this nonsense and the cries of racism and stuff that is going on, and then describe that, and then maybe Steve can say something like, yeah, that's really hindering things because there's too much tolerance of this. So right. Take it away, Shelby.
So what I talk about in book three, and again, no spoilers here, I see, and this is what I was attempting to write about, we have two politically correct ideologies happening in America right now. One is the whole LGBT community. We must all embrace it. You know, the transgender, the gay community, they are a part of us. We have parades over this and all of that. And I get it. They have that group of people are very vocal, and it's everywhere. And then we have over here the Muslim community. We are a religion of peace, and we just want to be here. We just want to, you know, don't hate us, don't hate us, don't hate us. Well, I know what you know, and that is that what you just said, the dogma of their religion that goes back hundreds and hundreds of years, not just something that was written last week and not something I made up. The two don't exist well together. That religion of quote-unquote peace is going to, and has in other places other than America, oppressed and killed people in the LGBTQ community, pushed them off of roofs, executed them because they are gay, because they are transgender, whatever. That is going to start happening here in America if it hasn't happened already and it hasn't been reported on. We know it's happened elsewhere. And what I see is there's those of us in the middle who are like, I can't say mean things about Muslims, and I can't say mean things about gay people because it's racist or hate or I'm a phobic or something. And what's going to happen is we are going to get paralyzed by political correctness, and people are going to start dying. What are your thoughts on that?
It actually has happened in America on a regular basis. And the most notable instance was just a few years ago, where the guy Omar Mateen attacked the Pulse gay nightclub down, I think it was in Orlando.
Orlando, Florida, exactly.
And we get all kinds of twisted explanations from the mainstream media, you know, that, you know, well, you know, it wasn't necessarily this type of an attack and all that. You know, there was a misunderstanding, you know, and it's just...
It's political correctness, and we can't say the truth, right?
That is exactly correct. You know, we see this across all segments of society in America right now, from the control of the language that we can use. For instance, one of the phrases that really grinds me is undocumented migrant or mm-hmm. undocumented alien. And, you know, they're illegals. And that's just that. They're trying to change the language and make certain subjects taboo, so that they can't be openly discussed and the problems addressed.
And that's the problem. The problems can't be addressed. And now I'm thinking I'm with my political hat on, like, you know, I'm a politically oriented guy. And when, as a political matter, you can't even say there might be a problem here. I might be mixing up my examples, Steve, but I want to say it was the Santa Barbara shooting where the guy who ended up doing it, you know, who was Arabic or whatever, his neighbor had watched this guy who ended up going on this killing spree with his wife, I want to say, like stockpiling guns and doing all kinds of really obvious stuff. But the neighbor said, and I'm paraphrasing, the neighbor said, I didn't want to tell the police because I didn't want to be thought of as racist. That's how this political nonsense is going to get people killed, and the terrorists know it, and they exploit it. And it's a huge problem. What do you think about all that?
I think that you have an amazing perspective on this, given the nature of your work in the courts, that our rules and our laws are being actually used against us. And all of this is ultimately going to come to a head at some point in time, you know, looking at the immigration issue and the, you know, how it's a touchy subject say anything negative about the migrants who are coming into the country right now. The sanctuary cities, who are sheltering them. All of this, in turn, is translating into a death toll.
Yeah.
And which President Trump highlights as much as he can during his last State of the Union speech. See the first to the second one that he did, where Nancy Pelosi invited a series of illegal immigrants to be her guests. President Trump invited victims, mm-hmm. or family members of victims of illegal immigrants that were, you know, and it's just, you know, to see this this contrast taking place in mindsets that in the end poses so much danger to the country, not only in internal strife, but bringing in foreign actors. And it's not just, you know, people from the Hispanic community and so on. People from, I think it's 56 different countries that they're collecting on the border. This is dangerous stuff. Something is going to happen.
Yeah.
Whether or not it's intentional or unintentional, in order to try and get a hold of this mindset, either to exploit it or to change it. And it's going to be something is going to change in this country, it's going to take something large that scares a lot of people in order to get beyond this.
So, okay, so there's a scene in book three, and again, I'm not giving away any spoilers, where I have this person from the LGBTQ community going to an elected official saying, you've got to do something about this. And a political official basically says, look, I have supporters from both the gay community and the immigrant community, and they many times those don't comport. I need support from both. You know what I mean? And I see that happening with left-leaning politicians who are like, yeah, I can't.
Sanctuary cities and sanctuary states where this breeds.
So what would you say to that imaginary politician in my book who's like, I'm not going to take a stand on this. I need support from both, and I want to be elected, and I can't, tough, right?
When the body count starts to get to a certain point, if a large attack is carried out, those politicians that refuse to take a stance, those people in the various parties that enable this mindset to propagate, these people will have blood on their hands.
Yeah.
And what else can you say? You know, it's, you know, I don't see major solutions to this without something very bad happening that shocks the nation. And, you know, President Trump or any other elected official, there is nothing that they're going to say that's going to change the trend right now. It's going to have to be some action that takes place. You know, look at what our elected officials in Congress are doing. For instance, AOC, on June 25th, she expressed rage that a company would actually be supplying beds to Customs and Border Patrol for these detention facilities. And that in turn led to a boycott of the company, a walkout of their employees, and so on. 1 week later, she was down at one of these detention facilities, raising all kinds of trouble as to why they didn't have enough beds for the people that were being detained there. These intentionally manufactured crises are just, this does nothing to rectify the problem. Congress will sit there and rail on the conditions that, you know, the babies are being taken care of in, or just, you know, the filth of the detention centers and so on. But on the other side, up until recently, they absolutely refused to even entertain bills that would have put more funding in there to enable these facilities to be expanded, the resources that were necessary to, for instance, set up tent cities and parking lots. And so all of this is doing is increasing the amount of strife in the country, And this in turn, this type of an environment where people are scared to say something, or there's so much angst built up. This is a type of environment that allows people with nefarious intent to thrive.
Exactly.
You know, Steve, and we were talking about the terrorists, the people that are coming across the country that are hiding behind our laws in the current social waves and all of that, you know, not expecting that people are going to say anything to law enforcement because they can be accused of being racists and all that. Just a very dangerous situation.
You know, Stephen, you were talking about a big event and a series of events and a lot of people getting killed. And I'd like to, sadly, I don't want to, but I need to focus on some of those scenarios, because we told folks at the beginning of the show we had some very specific terrorist events that could trigger this stuff. And I just threw up a list of things off the top of my head in no particular order. And I'd like to introduce those topics and then get your thoughts on them. And some of these, by the way, probably would not be carried out by people who are pouring through the southern border. So, you know, there could be that. So the first thing I think a lot of people worry about, and tell us if we should worry about this, is a hack, basically computer hacking of the power grid. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's right up there at the top, not only in your concern and the listener concerns, but also at the federal level. So much so that there's legislation currently in Congress that's working its way through the process that will mandate that the stakeholders, the different operators, the different power companies, at strategic points in the power grid and between power grids, go back to using old school technology. So instead of having things be computer controlled, they want manual switches that are in there. in order to prevent, for instance, a foreign actor half a world away from being able to noodle their way into the networks and bring down an entire network or an entire section of the power grid and cause ensuing months trying to figure out where the fault took place. Whereas if they put in the old school switches and so on at strategic points, they're able to in turn limit the how far such an attack could propagate. It's one of the top things that from FEMA to the different elements of the U.S. intelligence community to Homeland Security, it's a very big concern. The FBI has a program that's called the InfraGuard program. This is an information sharing relationship from between the FBI and the private sector, broken into, I believe it's 15 different areas of critical infrastructure. And the one dealing, the area of critical infrastructure dealing specifically with power and energy, is one of the most active groups, because not only the federal government, but the operators are so well aware of the vulnerability of the system right now to diddling by people that are half a world away. And these threats are, it's a very real threat that's actively being addressed right now on how to mitigate the risk that we've built up by moving to digital control of everything, moving, you know, being able to control major parts of the power grid just with a couple clicks on a mouse, as opposed to having a fleet of people that go out and have to start flipping switches and shutting down different stuff manually and all that. So,
you know, and related to a hack of the power grid would be a hack of the financial system. And what that would look like would be ATM machines don't work. The banking system doesn't work. There's so much commerce. There's billions of transactions a second in the United States. Everything from going to a retail store and buying something to a manufacturer buying, you know, 10,000, I don't know, new trucks or something. All these electronic things, all the stuff that happens, I mean, all the stuff that happens in this country has a financial transaction associated with it. And a similar hack on the financial system would prevent anything from happening. It would prevent you from going to a store, and it would prevent that manufacturer from buying all those trucks. So are there any sort of specific threats to the financial system other than the general ones we've been talking about?
A constant flow. And all of this, you know, getting into, if for your listeners that are interested, joining some of these special interest groups, you would see the breadth and the depth of the different types of attacks that are currently taking place. And it's not just bringing down the networks. Actually, money being pilfered from people's accounts is something that happens all the time, and can definitely contribute to a major destabilizing event taking place.
And I guess related to that would be a hack of the internet, because the internet is the backbone that powers the power grid until those manual switches are put in place. It's the backbone that powers the financial system. And then this would be the truly horrific part of a hack of the internet. No more Netflix. I mean, that kind of stuff. People would go insane. They'd be jumping off buildings without, you know, SpongeBob reruns and that kind of thing. So, you know, I assume everything we're talking about here applies to a potential hack of the internet, right?
Absolutely. And a big contributing factor to the vulnerability in all of this is the failure of corporations, government agencies at all level, whether or not federal, state, county, municipal, as well as individuals, not applying patches to their computer software and keeping up to date on just the security features that should be kept up to date with. This leaves tremendous vulnerabilities out there for, you know, remote execution of commands on certain systems, which in turn gives somebody access to a network. And this is almost on a daily basis. You can find on the internet new articles that are appearing that describe information, classified information being stolen, for instance, from defense contractors and so on. And then they discover that it was either a vulnerability was exploited because the software wasn't updated or the patches weren't applied. People clicking on attachments. You know, well, it looked like an email from Social Security, and so you click on the attachment, and all of a sudden your computer starts to excrete. Then it goes back to being fine, and then you find months later that the Office of Personnel Management, which is essentially the human resources department of the U.S. government, this was just a massive breach. More than a decade's worth of SF-86 applications were known to be stolen. Now, the SF-86 is the National Security Questionnaire that you have to fill out in order to get security clearances. This essentially takes this document's about 120 pages in length, and you reveal everything about your existence, about your finances, medical condition, who your friends are, your relatives,
love life,
contact
your love life,
everything. Yeah. And to have that much information be lifted, and now you can actually purchase sections of that database on the dark web. It just, to give an example of just the vulnerabilities that we set ourselves up for, or the flat out stealing of proprietary information. You know, you look at all the new weapon systems that are coming out from China, and they bear very close resemblances to everything that we're producing here. They might not have the same performance, but their drones look the same, and their new fighter aircraft are looking the same, having the same types of features.
You know, we have about 2 or 3 minutes. We're going to introduce the topic here on the regular show, and then we're going to finish it up on the after show, where, and we don't do this on purpose, all the good stuff's on the after show, and that's available to Patreon folks. We'll be talking about, for a minute or two, nuclear, biological, and chemical attacks, specifically dirty bombs. We'll probably run out of time far before we get into that. And then we'll talk about, on the after show, some lone wolf stuff. I guess with just the couple minutes we have, let me ask you this. We'll talk about nuclear, biological, and chemical in detail on the after show. If you were to rate threats out there, as far as likelihood, How likely or unlikely would, say, a nuclear, like a briefcase nuke, be, and then a biological weapon being released, or a chemical weapon being released? How does it fit in the hierarchy of stuff we need to worry about that would trigger a collapse?
Given the challenges of acquiring and working with radioactive materials, I wouldn't eliminate it, but I would put it down below chemical and biological. To illustrate this, if you recall, there was a former Russian spy and his daughter who were hit with the Novichok. a nerve agent that they were, somebody tried to assassinate him with over in the UK.
This was I apologize for interrupting. We run out of time on the regular segment so often on this kind of stuff. We're going to take it over to the after show. So, Shelby, this is the end of the regular show. Why don't you take us out with your awesome quote you always give?
From Benjamin Franklin, failing to prepare is preparing to fail. Everyone have a good week.
You've been listening to Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate. All of the fun and easy prepping information heard on this podcast can be found online at prepping2-0.com. You can also find out more about Glenn's books online at 299days.com and about Shelby's books online at agreatstate.com. Until next time, be smart, be safe, and be prepared.